Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
And I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
We're the best! We're the beautiful! We're the only!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
All right, welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. My name is Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how you doing tonight?
A little rough and rowdy, talking a little Roadhouse on the side, and ready to get rocking and rolling with a norm little slurpy slurp.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Why don't you introduce our special guest?
As always, a special guest that's near and dear to our hearts. My little brother, Jesse, is joining us today, and he's particularly very fond of dirty work, so he comes with an area of expertise unmatched by others. Jesse, why don't you say hello?
Hey guys, how's it going? I don't like when you talk me up as a resident expert on a topic, so I think everybody should love the movie Dirty Work. And if you don't appreciate this movie, then you're just worthless.
Yeah, I agree with that statement.
But spoken like a true expert.
Yeah, that does put you back in the expert field, though, with that statement.
Well, I'll take whatever title you guys want to give me.
Okay, douchebag it is. You'll stay with that one. Awesome. You know, since we're in the DeLorean, I think it's safe to say we can go ahead and travel back to last week and talk about our previous episode here. Jesse, you weren't a part of it, but we got into Super Mario Brothers, and somehow, even though I was kind of poo-pooed on the movie before we started, your brother turned me and made me a fan, and I actually enjoyed it. But JD, what was your feedback from the movie, and what did we hear from our audience?
Very positive feedback. Happy to see that people are responding well to the Super Plunging Brothers. Hey Jesse, we're not far behind on that, right? Are you? Am I Mario and you're Luigi? How are we doing that as siblings?
I think I would be Luigi in this.
Damn it.
He's the leader, okay. Man. Sorry, bud.
I always take second fiddle. But no, I mean, getting a lot of good feedback. Thank you again to everybody for joining us on Twitter and voting yes to reviewing Super Mario Brothers and usurping Kyle and his usually winning the poll. Boo to Kyle. Boo.
And speaking of poll topics, our last one just ended, and the winner of the poll topic is Happy Gilmore. So we're going to be jumping into that comedy with Adam Sandler. It was an all Adam Sandler poll. Jesse, I don't know if you saw that up on Twitter, but our audience picked Happy Gilmore over The Wedding Singer, Billy Madison, and My Sleeper, Bulletproof, that had almost no votes. Shout out to me and my mom for voting and everybody else for not. Thank you, guys.
I think you're going to be real happy with that. And I don't know if it'll be too soon for me to dial back in, but I do really like Happy Gilmore. And Justin, I believe at one point won a themed party costume contest.
Ooh.
Based on the character that Adam Sandler plays in that movie.
Please tell.
Justin, go ahead. It was a Christmas party or just a themed party that he threw, and it was a 90s themed, and I went for Happy Gilmore.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and you rocked it out with your flannel, and you had your hat on, and I believe you probably even had a 6-inch Subway somewhere in your pants.
Salami?
Which is generous, but thank you.
That's awesome. Right now, we actually have a new poll topic up, and we discussed this on the previous episode, our teaser trailer. But our new poll topic that's going to be going the rest of the week here, and this episode is going to drop second week of February, and we're back in the horror genre. So you can choose between Nightmare on Elm Street, Candyman, Hellraiser, or Child's Play, which of course is the one I want you guys to pick, but I won't try to steer your votes. So go up on our Twitter now, @BackInTimePod, and vote for the second week of February. We're also going to have some special guests on that episode, and it's going to be the guys from Black Cat Shadow. who have a horror podcast, and they're going to be joining us, and we're looking forward to that. Why don't we jump into some current news? I had a couple things I wanted to talk about, and then we'll jump into some intro the dirty work. So some casting news. Apparently, Zac Efron has been cast as Ted Bundy in the next movie. And I saw a poll topic online somewhere asking if people thought he could pull it off. So what do we think of Zac Efron in a movie about Ted Bundy, playing Ted Bundy?
Jesse, do you want to go first and then I'll interrupt you?
I can't picture it, honestly.
I can't picture it, honestly. I'm sorry, you go first and go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just on IMDb and clicking around and landed on the Baywatch page. So that's what I picture Zac Efron right now.
I'm going to play the counter, and I'm going to say, you know, Ted Bundy was known as kind of like a good, smiley, energetic, you know, family-friendly serial killer. And I think Zac Efron has the abs. He's got the smile. He's got the nose. Why not? I mean, I could even picture him with as a long-haired Charlie Manson.
Hey, man, why'd you bring up his abs again?
Hey, why do you think guys like us have to go to the gym, man?
Oh, I don't go to the gym. I'm just a sloppy mess now. No, I'm willing to give him the trailer to see what he looks like in the role. At some point, somebody said the same thing about Heath Ledger. Cast the guy from 10 Things I Hate About You in as Joker? Are you kidding? And that turned out pretty well.
Well, did it, though?
Oh, man, you hate Batman, too? Is this a family thing?
I mean, did it really turn out well for Heath?
I guess at the end, maybe not. I didn't know where you were going.
Morbid.
Too soon?
No. Plenty of time.
This really surprised me. Apparently, Paddington 2 is the best-reviewed movie of all time on Rotten Tomatoes. I didn't see Paddington 1. And I know when we talked about this the other day on upcoming films, I think on the Scream episode, neither one of us had any interest. Jesse, what do you think about Paddington 2? Any thoughts?
I'm going to be totally honest. I have no idea what Paddington 1 or 2 is about, besides I believe it's a bear, a stuffed animal, right?
Right, and the bear is dressed as the killer from I Know What You Did Last Summer, if I'm not mistaken.
He is dressed as him.
Ooh. I'm pulling it up right now, and it's kind of creepy.
That's the best comparison I've ever heard.
You don't wear a slicker like that unless you're planning on putting a meat hook through Ryan Felipe.
Is it a comedy? Is it a kid's movie?
Hey, nobody knows. Nobody knows. But it did get reviewed well, and apparently, last piece of Hollywood news, and I really brought this up because I'm a big fan of the movies they've been putting out, but apparently Amazon is going to be cutting back big time on indie films. And they're going to be turning their focus to big budget movies with a $50 million range. And they're going to basically get rid of all the indie projects they've been putting out lately.
Their indie projects are the ones that are winning awards.
Exactly. Lots of awards.
How much did Manchester by the Sea cost? And that just shut down the award shows.
Manchester by the Sea, also The Big Sick, which I recommended as one of my top movies of 2017. The latest Steve Carell movie, Last Flag Flying, came out on there. There's been a lot of stuff on there. The Marvelous Miss Maisel, which I know won a bunch of awards at the latest show. Weird. Why do you think they're doing that?
Because they can. I mean, they, you know, Hulu's, you know, a couple of steps behind what Netflix and Amazon is doing right now. But I mean, when you are a game changer, it's not about like participating in what the current slate of films looks like. It's about looking beyond it. So maybe we just don't know what kind of visual world of cinematography and cinema they have planned. So, you know, I'm open for it.
Yeah, and I think there'll still be a place for those movies if they want to buy them and invest into them after they've already been made. So I doubt that they're going to completely just stop supporting any independent movie. That would seem like a bad idea. Netflix doesn't even do that.
Maybe they'll redefine what an independent movie is, maybe. Maybe they're giving Steve Carell $50 million. You ever think about that? You ever think outside of your bubble, Kyle?
No, never. Always inside my bubble.
And that's why you don't get $50 million.
Well, that's why they call me Bubble Boy.
John Travolta or Jake Gyllenhaal?
Oh, definitely Travolta. All right, so let's do some intro to Dirty Work. Let's get into this thing here. So Dirty Work is a 1998 American comedy buddy film starring Norm Macdonald, Artie Lang, Jack Warden, and Trailer Howard. It's directed by Bob Saget. In the film, longtime friends Mitch and Sam start a revenge-for-hire business and work to fund heart surgery for Sam's father, Pops. When they take on work for a businessman played by Christopher McDonald in order to be paid, they create a revenge scheme of their own. Adam Sandler makes a cameo appearance as Satan. The film was the first starring vehicle for McDonald and Lang and the first feature film directed by Saget, coming 1 year after he left his long-running role as host of America's Funniest Home Videos. Jesse, what's your first memory of watching Dirty Work?
So I've been thinking about this all week, and I'm pretty certain that this was the second movie that I ever watched on DVD. I think, Justin, you got a DVD player one Christmas, and you got a couple DVDs with it. I'm pretty sure Dirty Work was one of them, along with Super Troopers.
See, I remember, I think I bought those movies with Best Buy or Target gift cards from Christmas.
That's exactly what you said on the last episode, actually. You bought it as a two-pack.
Okay, so that would have been the first time I watched. We watched Super Troopers and we watched Dirty Work, probably that around Christmas, whenever it was that you got that DVD player.
And I think we watched it in the basement.
Yeah, and I remember the first, whichever one we watched first, I tried to rewind it. And one of you guys who was college educated and experienced with DVDs kind of laughed at me and was like, dude, you don't need to rewind it. I don't know. I've been using VHSs.
Yeah, be kind to rewind, man.
That's a really good point. Shout out to the audience. Who else, the first time they watched a DVD, tried to rewind it? Because I did it with the first DVD that I ever watched as well.
Yeah, tweet us at Back in Time Pod. Let us know first time you got your DVD player and if you tried to rewind it, like Jesse. The film was broadly met with negative reviews from critics. It also didn't return much in the box office, but it became a cult classic. Co-star Artie Lang later became a regular on the Howard Stern Show. They also discussed the film quite a bit. I know we talked about this a little bit in the last episode where Artie Lang had told Howard Stern that the reason that the movie did not do as well as they had hoped is the studio insisted on a PG-13 rating and then moved the film's release from February to June, where it didn't fare so good against the big summer blockbuster hits. It was up against, Jesse, if you haven't heard that episode, it was up against The Truman Show, Can't Hardly Wait, 6 Days, 7 Nights, Godzilla, and Titanic, which was still going strong at the box office at week 26. Not easy competition for the little Dirty Work movie here.
Hey, Kyle, I've got an idea for a future episode.
Titanic?
No, I've never seen that movie. I can't imagine that I will miraculously see that movie. But we should do an episode where we review one version of Godzilla, whether it be from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, or current.
I like it.
We put the poll topic out there. Which version of Godzilla should we review? And why is it the Matthew Broderick version?
Why wouldn't it be the Matthew Broderick version? That's what I want to know. Yeah, that's a good one. Maybe we'll do that next week as we try and squeeze in poll topics. Our poll topics have been pretty popular. Thank you guys for voting. By the way, our last one had almost 100 votes, which is like 100 more than we had the last time. So that's exciting.
Maybe I'll make a Twitter and start voting.
Yes. Thank you, Jesse. Twitter it.
I'll Twitter it.
Let's jump into some interesting facts. I don't have a ton of them, but I want to dive into the ones that I found that were worth talking about. Chris Farley's last film is Dirty Work, which I did not know. I thought it was almost Heroes, and he was not included in the credits. Did you know that this was Chris Farley's last role, JD?
I did not. I remember it being almost Heroes as well. I feel like we fell into like the Twilight Zone, and we've got some like false history happening to us.
Fake news.
This movie came out a few months after Norm Macdonald was fired from Saturday Night Live. When it was out in theaters, none of the shows on NBC were allowed to advertise it. Jesse, what do you think about that? Is that fair to Norm that blacklisted from the entire NBC studio?
That sounds about right based on what I've heard about the way SNL kind of operates. And he had a pretty rough break from them, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's the issue, because obviously a lot of people have left the show. Farley, Sandler, Spade, Eddie Murphy. I mean, the list goes on and on. None of them seem to be blacklisted, but from what I remember, it was pretty ugly the way that he left. And I don't know if that's his fault or their fault. Potato penis, we have no idea. JD, anything to add on that? Do you remember that breakup?
I don't remember the breakup, but I remember the horror of seeing him not on Weekend Update anymore and being like, world, what has happened? And
who replaced him? Devastated. Do you know?
Was Colin Quinn before or after?
Good question. I have no idea. Who's the better? Who do you think is the best at that particular job, the Weekend Update?
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to have to say, in all honesty, despite the fact that I'm not a huge fan of him, I think Seth Meyers was just pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard to argue that one.
I mean, he's like a born, like how Jimmy Fallon is. They're not funny, but they're born hosts and they're hilarious in that role.
Yeah, I always enjoyed watching Jimmy Fallon laugh through every single scene.
Ooh, fighting words for Justin.
Hey,
I named my dog after Jimmy Fallon. I'm a huge Jimmy Fallon fan, but I can definitely admit when he has his shortcomings, and his movie, film, cinema, acting career is definitely a shortcoming.
Yeah. No, his show is awesome. I take nothing away from his show at all. Artie Lang was very wary of working with Chevy Chase after hearing many stories from friends and colleagues about his nastiness. But in his book, Lang recounted that he loved working with Chase and they became good friends. Lang also recounted that Chase warned him that MGM would force them to make the PG-13 film rated for release, even though it was written and filmed in R-rated film. Any thoughts on that? On Chevy Chase kind of being a dick, but then turning out to be cool.
The only thing I caught from that is, did you say Artie Lang had a book?
Apparently it's called Too Fat to Fish. And it's up on Amazon right now.
Oh, wow. He's got a book published, but I can't get one.
I think you can do it. My brother has a book, and he was working at McDonald's when he wrote it, so.
Well, it's through Amazon, you could do that. They got that little...
Shout out. I got one more... Interesting fact here, and then we'll move in. I know that Justin's going to love this one. Adam Sandler is uncredited in the role of Satan, but 2 years later, he would play Satan's youngest son in Little Nicky. JD, what do you think about that?
I think we need to cancel our show and start a new podcast dedicated to watching Little Nicky every day for 7 years straight.
Can we call it Back to the Nicky?
We can call it Little Nicky Picky.
That's not bad. I don't hate that. So let's get to our new segment of Shut Your Big Yapper.
I wish you could just shut your big yapper!
Hey, Jesse, I'm going to start with you. Do you have any Shut Your Big Yappers this week?
Absolutely. Chelsea Manning running for Senate. No, you're supposed to be in prison. Go back to jail. You're a criminal.
Ouch.
Coming in hot and hard. I don't even think she knows what that means to come in hot and hard.
I've got
to
shut your big yapper, and we're going to enter the sports arena here. Apparently, Paul Pierce got all butt hurt over the Boston Celtics wanting to honor Isaiah Thomas on the night that his jersey was retired. So he threw a fit, and the Celtics decided to pull the Videotron of Isaiah Thomas's return so they could focus on Paul Pierce's retirement. Paul Pierce, shut your big yap.
I'm sorry, didn't Isaiah Thomas play for the Detroit Pistons in the 80s?
There's a new Isaiah Thomas.
So you're telling me there's a new Isaiah Thomas. Say that one more time for me.
There's a new one. He's a very good little point guard, and he actually scores quite a bit more than the old Isaiah Thomas ever did.
Because shut your big yapper, you're just describing old Isaiah Thomas. There's only one. Shut your big yapper, Kyle.
I feel like you stopped watching all sports in 1994 because your only Bears reference pertains Eric Kramer. And now you're throwing a fit about Isaiah Thomas.
Well, let's get Alonzo Mourning back on the court. Let's dress Grandmama up and let's see some dunks.
Can we bring back some Muggsy Bogues, too? That guy was awesome.
Charlotte Hornets for life.
We're going to take a quick bathroom break, talk some social media, listen to a clip of the movie, and we'll be back on the other side with the full review.
What are you doing, Doc?
I need fuel.
Thank you guys for clicking the download button on today's podcast. Remember, the best way to help support this podcast is to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. So if you can take a minute or two to click that star button and write a quick sentence or two about what you love about the podcast, that goes a long way in helping support us and helping us grow the podcast. We also want you to communicate with us on social media, join our poll topics, let us know what you want to hear next, and that's at Back in Time Pod on Twitter. We're also on Instagram at Back in Time Pod, and then Facebook, we're facebook.com/Back in Time Pod. Now, here's a clip from Dirty Work. Let's listen to Norm MacDonald.
A guy like Travis Cole has a great life.
Why, just because he's rich?
No, because he doesn't take crap from anybody. There's two kinds of people in this world, those who get stomped on and those who do the stomping.
Where'd you come up with that theory?
That famous guy said it. What's his name? Jesus.
Yeah, we're back. Awesome, guys. Looking forward to jumping into this this full review here. So, I'm going to start us off. The movie begins with a flashback scene. We've got a chubby kid here walking over to a young Mitch Weaver. He tells the bully he can't give him his lunch money because he's not sure he's going to spend it on milk. The next shot is of young Mitch, and he's getting thrown right into the garbage can. JD, what do you think of this opening scene here with young Mitch and getting tossed into the first of many garbage cans in this film?
It definitely reminded me of grammar school in a number of ways, because I was once the short, chubby kid that was getting tossed around. But then I blossomed into a tall, bulking bully who tossed many a child into garbage cans. So it made me, it hit my feels, and it made me, you know, nostalgic for being short and fat and chubby, and then also picking on kids, which I don't do anymore.
Oh, not at all. We have our first shot of Pops next. He's played by the great Jack Warden. Jesse, what do you think of Jack Warden here in the role of Pops?
So I'm not familiar with anything else that he's in, but
how dare you?
He's amazing. He's so creepy the entire movie, and he's kind of mysterious. You don't really know what he does. He's a boxer, and later on he mentions a profession in a very interesting line of work as well. So you don't really know. Yes, the stag films.
I really love the way he says whores. It's like, whores.
Kyle, can you do me a favor? Can you drop some knowledge on Jesse and then anyone else in the audience that's not familiar with Jack Warden's work?
I sure can. Yeah, no, I'm happy to drop some knowledge on Jack Warden. He was a great actor for a lot of years. He was in a movie called 12 Angry Men. He was also in While You Were Sleeping, Bullets Over Broadway, Heaven Can Wait. He's also in the movie The Replacements. He's as Edward O'Neill. Do you remember him in that movie?
That one, Replacements, yeah. And then 12 Angry Men, I've actually never seen the movie.
Yeah, well, that took place in 1957, so we'll cut you some slack there. Yeah, but so, I mean, he had a long, long career of film, and I think he's got 162 credits. So, you know, if you're a movie buff, he's definitely worth going back and watching some of his early stuff. We also meet young Sam here, and Mitch and Sam steal Pop's gun, and they plant it in the bully's desk from earlier, and he's arrested in the next scene. And then we're going to have another scene here of Mitch, and he's going to be getting some revenge on a crossing guard. So I'm going to play a short little clip, and let's listen to Mitch describe this crossing guard here.
There was this crossing guard who used to grab all the kids' asses. Back then, people weren't on the lookout for that kind of thing. The only way to nail a guy like that was to catch him red-handed. That's where the super glue came in.
JD, what'd you think of this scene here with the ass-grabbing crossing guard?
I think this kind of goes into what we were talking about last episode about how, was it last episode or the teaser episode? We were talking about, you know, children being able to go out alone and not get hurt.
Teaser.
In the teaser, right. And this is like a perfect example of when you told me to shut my big yapper on it, because back in the day, shit was still wild.
They take a photo of the babysitter on the toilet next. Mitch says, after all these years, this picture still makes me horny. I mean, wistful. It makes me wistful. Jesse, how funny was this scene?
I was laughing. I watched that this morning when I was getting ready for work, laughing my ass off at that part. And I'm going to put one plug in that I want you guys to think about. Can you imagine if this movie were released in 2018?
No.
All of these things.
Grabbing the picture of the babysitter in the toilet. The next scene here with the large-breasted aunt who's giving him a hug. And then he writes, note to self, Aunt Jenny is your aunt. In the next scene here, they stuff the meter-maid lady's car with popcorn, and her engine explodes, and there's popcorn all over the place. And then we're going to get into present day, and we've got full-grown Mitch, and he's now a pizza delivery guy. And he's on his way to deliver a pizza. He runs into a traffic jam. He has to get out of the car and run to the door. The guy answers and says, 30 minutes are free, right? And you took 32. Mitch wants him to give him a break, but says the pizza comes out of his paycheck, but the guy doesn't care. In the next scene here, Mitch is trying to plead for his job, and he's making up this elaborate thing about how the guy doesn't like Italians, and he said this and that, and then his boss is just like, he called. He said you were late. What do you think of this opening scene here with full-grown Mitch and his job as a pizza guy, JD?
One, Mitch has a great car. Two, he has a great job. For those of you that don't know, my dream job would be a pizza delivery boy. My second dream job was working at a video store, which I had the chance to do after I graduated from a pretty prestigious little college. So for me to see him as a pizza delivery boy and to be so close yet so far, you sort of get a little feeling for kind of the negative drip that Mitch Weaver's life is.
As a former pizza delivery driver, I can tell you that would have been the most annoying thing possible, to have a 30 minutes or free and then the pizza comes out of your paycheck. I would have never taken that job. That's terrible. It takes at least 15 to get it made. Then you have just no time to get there. But, JD, I have a standing offer for you. You know, the family owns a pizza place. You move to Indiana, job's all yours.
Dream Deal.
Made. Call me Dream Maker.
I love it. You are my dream maker. Or should I say, shut your big yapper, I accept.
So Mitch is fired by Mr. Aldo and literally thrown out of the door, landing hard on the pavement. This is going to be the first of many times we watch Mitch get
second,
thrown.
No. That's the second time, because he got thrown in the dumpster as a child.
Oh, that's true. Yep, I forgot about little Mitch.
Let's take a count. Let's make sure that we try to keep a count of all the times that he gets thrown into a dumpster or outside of a restaurant or through a plate glass window.
I don't have any alcohol, spoilers. But I hear Jesse does. So Jesse, take a shot. We have some Third Eye Blind playing in the background here as Mitch arrives back at his apartment. People are walking down the alley with his clothes on. His girlfriend, Tony Ann, says, Uncle Aldo called and said you're fired. Mitch said, well, he understands why she's so mad about him losing another job. And maybe she'll feel better if he comes upstairs and they have some dirty sex. I don't know why that would make her feel better. Jesse, what do you think about that?
Hey, it's worth a shot. And the other time, it's probably the only thing he's doing right, because he's been fired from 14 jobs in 3 months.
Sam is walking down the road next. Mitch is sitting on the doorstep. He wants to know if he can crash with him and his dad for a while. Sam says, yeah, like I'm going to turn away my best friend. Come on in. We see a guy walking down the street here, and he's wearing Mitch's polo t-shirt. So he stops the guy and wants it back. So the guy takes off his shirt to reveal a whole body full of just nasty hair everywhere. Mitch says, sorry, I was talking to somebody else. Keep it. JD, are you a hairy guy? Are you a chest shaver?
Okay, I'm going to answer you twofold. One, am I a chest shaver? No, I'm a man.
Yeah, baby.
I'm not hairy. I'm not, shut your big yapper.
It was supposed to be my Austin Powers, but it didn't come off very powery.
But I'm glad that you stopped at the scene, because I want to comment on the fact that, let's look at this logically and practically for a moment. We've got this kind of light bulb shaped man sort of meandering aimlessly down this road where a spaghetti-shaped man points at him and says, "Hey, you're wearing my shirt." To which the guy responds with, "Oh, apparently I am. Let me take my shirt off and give it to you." So either this man did steal Mitch Weaver's shirt, in which case he left his house shirtless, found this polo on the ground, and was like, "I'm going to wear this now." Or he was like totally cool with the fact that some stranger said, "Hey, that's my shirt. Take your shirt off and give it to me." And he was like, "Yeah, you're damn right. I'm going to take my shirt off." Which one is he, Kyle? Is he a liar? Or is he just a, like a little...
He may be a little... But I have no idea.
He's
maybe
ready to beak.
The mystery of the movie. That's why this movie is so good. We don't know where this guy came from and what happened to his other shirt. Did he leave the house with no shirt? We'll never know. Before I go too far, let's talk about Mitch and Sam here real quick. So Mitch is played by Norm MacDonald. JD, I'll let you take Norm. I'll give Jesse Artie. What do you think of Norm MacDonald in the role of Mitch here?
I don't think anyone else can fill his shoes or his baggy plaid shirts.
Jesse, what about Artie Lang? I think this is the first time I remember seeing him in a movie. He's very funny in this. What do you think of him?
He is really funny, and I feel like both of these characters are written specifically for these actors.
I would agree with that, and I know that he had done some like previous stuff with like Mad TV, but yeah, this is definitely like his first feature film as like a starring actor, and it didn't really propel him to much later on. A big fan of his movie in 2006, he's in a movie called Beer League.
Beer League.
That was the only
co-starring Ralph Macchio.
Ralph Macchio?
How do you say his last name?
Macchio.
You sure?
Macchio? No, I'm not sure anymore. Jesse?
Dang, I think it's Macchio. Is it Macchio?
We'll have to watch that episode of The Entourage.
Fuck.
Pretty sure it's Macchio.
Ralph M., tweet at us how to pronounce your name, and then give us a swift butterfly kick across the jaw.
And he could. You better believe that. So we've got this opening scene with Pops here. Sam wants to know if Mitch can keep an eye on Pops while he takes care of a few things. Mitch says, "He kind of creeps me out." And he goes and sits down next to Pops on the couch. And Pops says he overheard Mitch. So he wants to thank you for spending some time with me, Mitch. And I just want to say I'm sorry. I'm sorry for being a creepy old man. And he starts choking Mitch. And then Sam comes in to save him. JD, what do you think of Pops here attacking Mitch?
This is the worst acted scene in a movie that I think we've reviewed. Like, Pops is not, like, there's no force at all. Mitch Weaver's just kind of like shaking as he's just pretty much, Pops just pretty much has his hands on his shoulder. Like, sell it a little bit, Norm. Like, get choked. Sell it.
I also love that Pops is just sitting there watching aerobics.
Eating cereal.
Eating cereal, watching aerobics, and choking Mitch. Oh, so awesome. Mitch and Sam are grabbing a beer at the bar next. Mitch says, "Well, I guess things could be worse. I could have gotten my nose bitten off by a Saigon whore." And then we've got our introduction of Chris Farley here in the role of Jimmy. I'm going to let him do the talking here. So let's listen to a clip. Let's listen to a clip of Chris Farley here.
"Yeah, well, things could be worse, you know. I could have got my nose bit off by a Saigon whore. You bastard! Hey, I'm just messing with you, Jimmy. I saw you down there. Hey, Mazzetti, get Jimmy a beer on me."
"Okay. Sorry."
Jesse, what'd you think of this first scene here with Chris Farley?
I just want to comment first on the outfit he's got on. Oh my goodness. Outstanding. He looks like the kind of guy I'd want to go have a beer with at a bar like this.
Yeah, half a nose or not, I think he looks awesome. And the prosthetic on his nose is just amazing.
That slow turn that he does is amazing. Because if you see in the background, he's like looking off to the distance, smoking a cigarette. Right. And then they spin as he does that slow turn. It's amazing.
And I love he even has a little Tommy boy in there at the end where he's like, "Hey, get him a beer." And he's like, "All right."
It does a little chuckle.
Yeah, Jimmy, of course, played by the great Chris Farley. This is his last ever movie role. That's one of our interesting facts. So we have our first shot at Travis Cole here, played by Christopher McDonald. JD, what do you think of Christopher McDonald in this role as Travis Cole?
I think we all know Chris is, you know, for his great villainous role as Shooter. Bang, bang. And he comes in as Travis Cole, and he comes in hard. He comes in high. He comes in hot, and he comes in dry.
Yeah, I really love the touch of the small dog that he's never without.
So creepy.
Sam gets into an argument with a frat boy next. The girl that they're both hitting on says, should fight it out. So we've got a clip here. This could be the last clip in the bar scene. One of my favorite moments of the movie here. And we're getting some Rolling Stone street fighting G7. Let's take a listen.
And wow.
Well, Mitch, looks like we got ourselves a fight, huh? Great, it's fighting time. Can I be on their side?
Looks like there's gonna be a brawl. You playing something good?
Hell yeah! Rolling Stone, street fighting man, G7!
You just hit G8.
If you like pina coladas,
bring it on!
Alright, then we got this giant fight that ensues, and Mitch is a terrible fighter. But JD, what do you think of this scene here with the classic scene from Chris Farley?
Well, do you like pina coladas?
I do. Yeah, absolutely.
Also, G7!
One part of the scene I don't think it's talked about enough. In the background of them fighting, you can hear Chris Farley yelling, "Bite him! Bite him in the nose!"
I don't know if this is on your next point, but we get Mitch Weaver thrown through something, so Jesse owes us a shot.
Oh, I'm drinking! Oh, okay, I thought I was counting. I like this way better.
Three fingers. So we're at the frat house next. Mitch and Sam are dressed up as cops. He calls the frat house on the payphone and tells the guy that answers, there's a bunch of guys going around dressed up as cops, but they're not real cops. They just ripped off one of the Delta houses. So now you go back to doing some blatantly homoerotic. The frat guy hangs up the phone. Jesse, what do you think of this scene here with Mitch as the cops?
Hey, Neil, is that you, man? It's hilarious. Like, we beat him real good. Like, this guy's a total douchebag. But yeah, this prank is very well thought out. I really, really like this prank. Because the first time I watched it, even like watching it today, I kind of forgot what they did.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, that's a pretty like simple yet complex prank that they get to go beat some ass.
So in the next scene here, the cops show up. The frat guy says, yeah, whatever, and punches the cop right in the face. And then we go outside and the frat guys are just getting the shit kicked out of them by the police here. Mitch tries to punch one of them here, but just ends up hurting his own hand. And Sam comes in and knocks the guy out. We're back at the house. Pops is watching some more. Nope, go ahead.
Hey, real quick, I want to jump in. And I just want to make the comparison from this scene to the movie Batman Forever.
Okay.
When Two-Face and Riddler are they
yada exactly
yada yada.
What you're talking about.
Yeah, and they're in that they're robbing the bank or whatever that they're doing, and the cops come, and then the Riddler he winds up and he's like, I got this one, and he goes to punch him, and it's the exact same thing as Mitch Weaver hitting the jaw and just getting stone fisted, and it's no good.
Yeah, I love that Jim Carrey scene. He's just like, let me hit him, winds up and just bing. And then Tommy Lee Jones knocks him out. We have to get into Batman Forever. That's going to be an episode. So we're back at Pop's house. He's watching some aerobics. Sam and Mitch talk about how Mitch is the king of revenge. And Pops has a heart attack on the couch here. And we're going to wake up in the hospital next year. But unfortunate for Pops, who, I guess, do we blame this on the aerobics? There's too much for him to handle?
I hope to never find out.
Well, I mean, you watch a lot of those videos, so I thought you'd be the one to answer.
It's not that I watch a lot. It's just that I watch it 3 to 18 times a day.
So Pops wakes up in the hospital. He tells Mitch that he needs to tell him that he's his father. He wants to tell him now since he's not doing so well. Mitch kind of doesn't believe him, so Pops shows him a photo in his necklace, a little locket. And you'd think it's like you know, a picture of them, like, just maybe kissing or holding each other. No, it's a picture of them having sex. So Mitch is like, oh my God, why would you show me this? So now he believes him. Jesse, what do you think of this scene here with the locket?
So does he keep this locket his entire life? Has he had this
thing? He sure picture? Does.
That's amazing.
Yep, and there's a really awesome tie-in later in the film we'll get to as well. We're going to see Chevy Chase next here. He is Dr. Farthing, and he shows up here. Jesse, what's your favorite Chevy Chase movie, and why is it Man of the House?
So I've listened to your guys' podcast, and you've drawn attention to the fact that I like that movie. What if I throw you a curveball and say Christmas Vacation?
I would accept and say that is one of my favorite movies, too.
And I would decline my big brother card, you son of a bitch.
In all seriousness, though, JD, do you have a favorite Chevy Chase movie?
For the sake of, you know, appearing aloof and mysterious and wanting people to think that I'm really cool, I'm going to say Orange County.
Okay. Okay, that's not bad. I thought you were going to say, like, Hot Tub Time Machine. I was going to have to smack you through the computer.
Great White Buffalo.
He tells Mitch and Sam that if he was a betting man, he would bet on death when it comes to Pop's living. And they're just like, oh my gosh, get some bedside manner. He needs a heart transplant, and he tries to sell them some stuff after he tells them that he needs a transplant. So Dr. Farthing is trying to make some money on the side here. And he tells Mitch he can't help it. He's a compulsive gambler. One of his bad bets he made was on Rocky III. And Mitch says, don't tell me you bet on Mr. T. Yeah, odds were 50-50. JD, what do you think of that scene?
First of all, Rocky III is my favorite Rocky movie.
It's a solid one.
Clubber Lang. I mean, Clubber Lang, come on. No, I'm serious, Kyle. Clubber Lang, come on. A pity to fool. Jesse, the Terriers.
Hey, woman. Hey, woman. You want to be with the real man?
That was good.
Southpaw, nothing. Or was that Apollo Creed? Cut that out. That was Apollo Creed. That was Apollo Creed. Damn it. Cut that out.
No, you sound like an idiot. I'm leaving it in.
Damn you. I hate you. Clubber. Mr. T, I need you to come Clubber Lang Kyle up inside the jaw.
Punch me in the gut. He tells Mitch he can save Pops if they can get him $50,000 by next week. So in the next scene.
Whoa. No. Time out, Kyle. He didn't say $50,000. He whispered $50,000.
That's a good point. Sam and Mitch are on top of the building next. They come up with a plan to try and get the money. And meanwhile, while they're trying to talk plan here, Sam is pissing on a guy who's sitting down below the building here. And then he goes, hey, Sam, are you pissing on that guy? And then he shows up and attacks him on the rooftop and they have to run off. Jesse, what do you think of this scene here? And have you ever pissed on somebody?
I've never pissed on somebody, no. I don't know that I've ever pissed off a rooftop or a balcony or anything like that. And the fact that he's just doing it so casually is hilarious. Nonchalantly. Doesn't think twice of it. And then This dude just busts through soaking wet.
Yeah. It's like somebody dumped like a 10-gallon bucket of piss on his head. Just comes up drenched. So we've got some quick scenes here next of the guys trying some different jobs. One's in construction, another one where they're eating special brownies. I love how Sam has no ill effects from the brownies at all. And then they go to Mitch here, and he's completely broken out in rashes. And he's looking at Gary Coleman sitting next to him in his car, and Adam Sandler is Satan, who they're looking at, and he's just shaking uncontrollably. JD, what do you think of this scene here with Satan and what you're talking about, Willis?
I love it because it's sort of like it doesn't necessarily fit with a lot of the rest of the movie, but it fits with a lot of like the themes that 90s movies hit, where you can go from like A to Z in one scene, where you can go from like, oh, hey, we're eating Mama Mabel's brownies or Grandma Mabel's brownies, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, like, he's freaking out and he's just flipping and he's in hell and Adam Sandler's there and Gary Coleman's there. And it's just like, yeah, that's kind of like a very specific and scary vision of hell.
Hey, how much do you think Sandler got paid for that scene?
$17, six peanuts, a button, and a half spool of gray thread.
Okay. Seems accurate. I can't challenge that. So we're at the movie theater next. They finally have landed a job here, and we're going to meet Mr. Harrison, who's the manager of the movie theater here. And I want to play a clip here. Don Rickles, if you don't know Don Rickles, get on IMDb, listen to some of it, or watch some of his movies. He was an awesome actor, and this clip is hilarious here. So he's going to show them how he does his managerial style. Let's take a listen.
Right now, I'm going to explain to you my managing style for the benefit of the new guys. So there you are, Tubby. Ah, look like a bucket of lard on a bad day. You baby gorilla. Why don't you work a zoo and stop bothering people? Got a call yesterday from Baskin Robbins. They said that they're down to only 5 flavors. You're swelling up as I talk to you. Look at you. How's this? How's it doing? Hello, ice cream. Having a good time? Running around? What are you laughing at? Because I called your friend a fat pig, huh? You think that's funny?
Oh, no. I was just laughing earlier when you were talking to his belly.
Did you get a horse and live in the mountains someplace? Don't bother anybody. Got a personality like a dead moth. Okay.
Jesse, what do you think of this scene here with Mr. Harrison?
This is hilarious. I love that he goes, let me tell you about my managerial style, and then just starts berating all of them.
Yeah, it's awesome. It actually might be my favorite scene in the movie.
Mitch is like, I don't know, like earlier when you were talking to his belly, I was laughing at that. Like, he's just so like...
Still so dry. One of the things I wanted to point out here, standing right next to Mitch in this scene is Kevin Farley, Chris's younger brother.
Really?
Yeah, so and he's got the line coming up here in a second, too. So after Harrison berates everyone, Mitch comes up with a plan to get him back. The workers say, if you can really screw him over, I'm good for 10. Another guy says, I'll give you 20. And everybody starts chipping in here. Mitch and Sam are in the projection booth next. Mitch says, okay, look away. And on the screen it says, men in black who like to have sex with each other. Look, an alien. We better have sex with each other. Sam looks up at the reel. And Mitch grabs his recorder and says, note to self, Sam just looked at the screen. Everyone starts rushing out of the theater here. And then Kevin Farley's character tells them, that was amazing. You guys should do this stuff for a living. And that's the end of the scene here. And that's kind of how their Revenge for Hire business is born. So what do you think of this scene, Jesse?
I love the men in black who like to have sex with each other. Because the guy that they have sounds like Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, I did pick up on he's doing a pretty good impression, or he just naturally sounds like him.
I want to believe they actually got him to do one day of voice recording for this scene.
Mitch tells Sam they should start a revenge for hire business. They would be the first in the field, like the guy that invented delivering pizza to people's houses, or the guy that invented crack. They sign a lease the next day, and they've got their new business here. And from across the street, we see Kathy from the bar. Mitch has forgotten her name, so he just yells, hey, Mildred! And he runs over to her, and she's like, you do know my name's Kathy, right? He's like, no, I forgot, so I just guessed. Have you ever done that, Jesse? Have you ever just guessed on a girl's name because you wanted to talk to her?
No, but I have either forgotten or not been told a girl's name and had to come up with creative ways. I've never done something this blunt, and he's just straight up, I thought I'd guess. Yeah. And it works for him.
Give him credit.
Yeah.
And total props to him for running across the street and having his oversized plaid shirt flap like Batman's cape.
So she's got to go back to work. She says that she works at Phillips Auto, and her boss Anton comes out and yells at her. And then Mitch wants to know if he always talks to her like that. She says, yeah, he does. And she's got to go because they're getting ready to film a live commercial tomorrow. And that gives Mitch an idea. Now, let's talk about Anton for a second because he's one of my favorite actors. He's been in practically everything. What did you think of Anton here?
Champ hair.
Whammy. But yeah, David Koechner is the role of Anton. And although it's a small part, this is pretty early in his career still before he kind of took off. I have to say, he does a great job here.
Somehow he's a perfect used car salesman.
Perfect.
I also love that this is early in his career, but it literally looks like it was him yesterday. He has not changed even one little bit.
He's never aged.
He's ageless. In the next scene here, we've got some scantily clad women. Mitch says, "All right, quiet down, hookers." And he explains they don't need to have sex with anyone, despite what this guy says. And he points to Sam. Anton Phillips is recording the live commercial. Mitch walks out in front of the camera and says, "Hey, that trunk there looks kind of small." Anton gets mad for a second, but then reels it in because he's on live television. Says, "No, it's not. Jump up. I'll show you." He pops the trunk. Mitch says, "Look, a dead hooker in the trunk." Anton tries to cover it up. And then Sam starts popping all the trunks. And Mitch just goes around, "Look, another hooker. Another hooker." And Jimmy is watching from the bar here. The bar hop says, "There's Mitch." And Jimmy stands up and yells, "And there's that Saigon whore that bit my nose off." And he goes running out of the bar. Anton is trying to close all the trunks here when Mitch gets in front of the camera and says, "Is some jerk making your life miserable? You want revenge? Call 555-0807. Let us do your dirty work." Jimmy arrives and says, "Wake up, slut. Well, 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 we meet again, nose biter. Time to pay the fiddler, whore." And he chases the girl out of the scene here. JD, what do you think of this scene here?
Dude, Jesse, do you remember they used to play that on that local Chicago station all the time, Q101?
Ooh, I know that show. I had Q101.
They used to always do, "Time to pay the fiddler, whore." I love it because they bring Chris Farley's character back in a big way, and they give him a purpose, and they give him urgency, and, you know, the Saigon whore who bit his nose off needs to effing run. You don't bite off Chris Farley's nose.
What's he going to do when he catches her? Like,
have you never been with a hooker before?
Oh,
Jesse, you've never been with a Saigon hooker before, have you?
Never have. I guess I need to fix that.
Well.
Hey, before we leave this scene, can I... Like, you did not mention the greatest part about this scene.
Go for it.
Two quotes. Favorite quotes of the movie. "I know a dead hooker when I see one." And then... "I've never seen this many dead hookers in my life." And the dude goes, you cut to the guy in the audience who just goes, "God knows I have."
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you brought that up because I try and get as much as I can in there, but I'm typing away like a mad scientist trying to get all these notes in.
That's what she said.
Line in the entire movie.
"God knows I have." In this next scene here, Dr. Farthing is now in an arm sling. And Pops tells him, "If that thing's as cold as it was yesterday, I'm going to shove it straight up your ass." Dr. Farthing says, "Well, I think he checks out." And he leaves. Mitch and Sam walk in. Pops wants to know what you two fruits are up to. Jesse, you ever have a grandparent or an uncle that would call you a name like that when you'd walk into the room? Like, "What up, fruitcake?"
I think Uncle Terry probably uses terms like that. Oh, and the other one.
Ted with the broadsword.
Yeah, I'll take the broadsword.
We were playing, so this is a true story. I got Bushido Blade, for those of you that remember that game for the original PlayStation.
Nice.
Got that for Christmas one year, and Jesse and I were downstairs playing it, and had a cousin come over, an older gentleman, and he was watching us play and was selecting the broadsword, which was the heaviest and strongest blade in the game, for those of you who don't know. And he just started giggling like Beavis and Butthead. He's like, "Broadsword. This is an adult."
That's awesome. Mitch tells Pops he's made up his mind. He's going to tell Sam. And Pops reaches over and just grabs his nuts and starts squeezing until he agrees not to tell Sam. And then probably my favorite part of is the end part of the scene here where Mitch goes, "Note to self. Don't tell Sam." What do you think of this scene, JD?
Dude, he's got like a massive mandible claw going right up in the groin area.
Mr. Sacco, right in the nuts. Not cool. Dr. Farthing tells them they have 9 days left. Might I suggest kidnapping the child of a celebrity? Mitch tries to tell Sam next that Pops is his father, but he can't. He just can't get it out of his mouth yet.
That's what he said?
There you go. Ayo. They kind of have a heart-to-heart next, but Mitch tells him to keep his distance, Liberace, as he goes in for a hug. Kathy comes in. She's pissed off at Mitch because now she's out of a job after the stunt he pulled. They had to close the dealership when a dwarf walks into the store, and he's going to get some work for the circus here. So in the next scene, they're outside at the circus, and the dwarf tells him, "That's the lady there. She's a classic dwarf hater." And a bearded lady walks up. She says, if you haven't had a bearded woman before, you haven't lived. Mitch pulls out his recorder and says, note to self, I don't want to live. She says she'll be in her trailer if he wants to come in and get it. And Sam yells, does that go for me too? And she doesn't respond to him. But in the next scene here, she rolls over later in the evening and her entire beard is now gone and she's clean shaven. And she runs outside and the dwarf is spray painting over her sign that says bearded lady. Jesse, what do you think of this scene here?
Well, I'm gonna say what we're all thinking is, damn, she's good looking. Minus not, the whole beard thing.
Not bad for a bearded lady, but I'd have to agree with Mitch. Like, I would not want to live. I don't need a beard. In the next scene here, they're going to make it unbearable to live in this house. The neighbor is tired of them disturbing his peace. So they decide to go into this guy's mansion of a house and just put fish all over the place. A couple of cars pull up. They go inside. The guy lays out a briefcase. And the guy that he's selling, whatever he's selling him, says, smells like fish in here. The guy wants to know if it's a signal. You a cop? And then a big gunfight ensues. And we hear screaming, people yelling to make it stop. And the camera just stays on Mitch and Sam the entire time, who stand there just holding two fish in both their hands. So eventually it stops and they go into the room here and all you can hear is squishy blood on the ground. And the neighbor runs in and says, this has got to stop. And then he sees the massacre and says, I didn't ask you guys to do all this. Good God. JD, what do you think of the massacre here?
Is it me, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but this scene like really mirrors that scene in Scarface, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like it seems like it's like an exact replica of that scene, and I love that. Like the fish part is hilarious. I wonder how they get into the house. I wonder how much money they get paid.
Let's move into this next scene here. So they get a voicemail from Hamilton, and Sam's listening to it here, and he's like, "I saw you on TV, fatso," and he starts to try and break up the machine with a bat, and then they get a call here, and Sam hits that with the bat as well, so Mitch has to just talk out a little speaker, and he says, we'll be right there. So they meet an old lady next, and she's telling him that Travis Cole is trying to bulldoze her house, and we see a bulldozer popping popcorn in the next scene. Police see a trail of corn that leads them all the way back to their store, where Mitch and Sam are arrested here. I know there's a lot in between. I'm kind of leaving out here. There's some funny lines from the cops. But Jesse, what do you think of this scene here with the guys kind of coming to the rescue of this old lady, pulling the popcorn trick for the second time?
I love the popcorn trick because it's really ultimately harmless. You know, there's some popcorn. And I think it's awesome they put it right after the prank that was so wildly illegal, like breaking into a drug dealer's house and leading a gunfight that kills a bunch of people. And then they do this little harmless one to help an old lady. So you're like, it brings you back into like, they're just good guys doing good things, you know?
Right.
And the cop part is funny. Like, what were they doing? Carrying a whole bag of fucking popcorn kernels back to their office that they don't need?
Yeah, one of the cops is like, they either really want us to find them or they're the two dumbest crooks of all time. And then they walk into the building. And then we're in the prison next here. And Mitch is telling Sam, you know what happens in prison. And he leans over and whispers in his ear. Sam says he's never heard of that. And then three guys come over to Mitch and take him away. And as he's being taken away, he says, are you sure you don't want him too? The next scene here is Mitch kind of pulling up his pants and then yelling at the guys, you guys got a lot of growing up to do. Ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. You know, what hurts the most is the lack of respect. Well, second most, because the other thing hurt the most. And then Mitch and Sam are let out of the prison. And on his way out, Mitch yells one more ridiculous to him. JD, what did you think of this scene here?
So you didn't mention the fact that he actually does say originally anal rape.
Does he?
You can look at his mouth in this scene. He is not saying what he's speaking. He is definitely saying anal rape.
Interesting. I'd have to go back and look at that. That's a good catch by you.
So are we just, is the assumption here is Norm MacDonald just get ass raped?
Yes.
Again.
Exactly what happened.
Can you imagine this movie getting released today?
Well, that's what they wanted it to be. They wanted it to be an R rating movie. And then the studio made them change it to PG-13. Hence the voiceover here of them taking out the words anal rape.
As it stands right now would be like NC-17. if they tried to release it today.
Yeah, for sure. Outside, Travis Cole is meeting with Mitch and Sam here after he's dropped the charges. They're free to go. He's talking to the press. His dog barks, and Mitch leans over to Sam and says, I think he's got a finger up that dog's ass. Travis leans over and says, I might have a job for you guys. So they're in Travis's office next, and he wants them to condemn a building that he owns. Sam says he doesn't know about this. They haven't done a job this big. Mitch says, okay, we'll do it for $50,000. And Travis agrees. So they're going to get their money here. JD, what do you think of Mitch's assumption here that Travis has got his finger up his dog's ass?
I definitely think that what we're seeing is we're seeing two men that are desperate. Neither men have had any sex in this movie. And I'm really thinking that Mitch Weaver wishes that it was he with the thumb up his ass. And then in the previous scene, we can only assume that he had gotten much more than the thumb up his ass.
So they go in to see Pops next. Mitch says, we got good news. And Pops says, great, bring on the whores. And Sam leaves the room again, and Pops leans over to grab a book, which Mitch screams and ducks out of the way here. Pops says, what's the matter with you? Why are you so jumpy? Mitch says, I don't know, maybe from a long history in my life of random assault from you. Pops shows him some pictures, and then one of the photos he thinks of is of Mitch's mom again, which freaks him out. He says, no, that's not your mom, that's Sam's mom. And then, of course, Dr. Farthing is in the next scene here with Sam, and now he's wearing a boot, too. And apparently the mom guy has blown his toe off of one of his feet. So he's in an arm sling and a boot. What do you think of this scene here with Pops, Jesse, and Dr. Farthing losing another a limb here?
I love how nonchalant Pops is about the personal collection of homemade porn that he has. So apparently that was a thing, and you just snap in a Polaroid and flip him in a scrapbook. And then, again, Dr. Farthing, Chevy Chase is just so nonchalant. Like he says earlier, it was either sleeping on it funny or a bookmaker's throwing me out of a car. He's just getting, like, how is he allowed to be a doctor?
Katie shows up next to thank Mitch for his help. They go for a walk. She says, I want you to meet my grandma. And she's living in the building that they're about to condemn. She's like, hey, meet my friend Mitch. He's the big hero. Mitch is like, well, you know, hero one day and never know. Next day you may hate me. And he kind of nervously laughs it off. Mitch is definitely torn here about this. But ultimately, in the next scene here, they're gonna go through with it. So, JD, just from a writing standpoint, what do you think of the tie-in here with the grandma, the house, and what Mitch is trying to do? He's got to save his dad now.
In terms of writing, it's a really poor delivery for them to just tie this back in. But at the same time, Norm MacDonald's delivery of him just kind of shrugging his shoulders and being like, well, I don't care. I've got my own thing to do. It makes it worthwhile.
One of the next scenes here I thought was really funny, and it's Sam. He's like, oh, you know, you're really into this Kathy girl. And he's like, no, I'm not. And he's like, God, that's your telltale sign. See, watch this. Have you ever robbed a bank? No. You ever climbed Mount Everest? No. Do you ever say you understand why women find Sean Connery sexy? No. See, Jesse, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you understand why women find Sean Connery sexy? Yes or no?
No.
Next scene here is a compilation of the guys just destroying the building. Again with the fish. They always have the fish in here, which I love. Sam is running through doors. Mitch is trying. He just bounces off of them and then lights one on fire so he can step through. Sam is dropping explosives down the toilet, which comes back to bite him because one of them goes off while he's taking a dump. Mitch finds a photo of Sean Connery and folds it up and keeps it for himself instead of destroying it, which I thought was hilarious. He gets to Kathy's grandma's apartment and looks at the photo of Kathy and her grandma and just continues to destroy the building anyway. So in this next scene here, we're going to find out, they're watching it on TV, that the building is not owned by Travis Cole. And it's actually owned by the guy that's renting out their building, who threatened to punch him in the stomach, Kirkpatrick. So he says, they interview Travis Cole at the end of this, and he says he will be forced to bulldoze the building now. So Mitch and Sam enter Travis's building, and they're kind of turned away by security here. So Mitch is, once again, going to get thrown out face first. Jesse, take a shot. That's number 4. And on the building, or to the side of the building here, Mitch approaches a couple bums, and they say, what you guys need are some psycho bums, because we're not the type of guys to do that. And the other guy says, yeah, you're really looking for the broken, spiritless, you know, lost the will to live type of guys. Mitch says, how about for $2? And then the guys are running through the building next, screaming, and Mitch and Sam go to the elevator and go right up to Cole's office. Threw a lot at us here. JD, let's dissect it a little bit. What'd you think of this scene here with the guys kind of destroying the apartment and then finding out that they've been set up?
Well, first of all, I want to make sure that we note that one of the bums, at least, was previously in a prior scene and fired by Cole.
Yes.
And it's not really...
And hairless by the end of the day.
So it's not really, like, expressed. So if you're not really paying attention, you might miss that. But I think it's really cool that, you know, this guy, he's got no lines. He's got no importance. You know, you just see him and you're like, oh, okay, he's fired and hairless by the end of the day. And here he is now outside. And it's kind of funny. It sucks for his life. And he's kind of really depressing. One of the bums is totally wearing an Eric Cartman South Park hat. Right? I mean, am I the only one that's ever thought that?
Oh, yeah. No, you're right on.
That's all I had.
Okay.
Feel free for anyone else to jump in.
They approach Travis Cole's office next, and they are demanding their money. And he says, well, I figured out a way to help me and hurt you at the same time. So it's kind of like I'm doing your dirty work. And he kind of throws it back in their face here. They say they're not going anywhere until they get their money. And Mitch is thrown face first out of the building again. Jesse, take a shot.
Yep.
Mitch approaches the homeless guys again. And one of the guys, the one in the middle that's been fired, starts to go on this long explanation of how he got fired. And he's getting a little emotional. And in the middle of it, Mitch just cuts him off and goes, here's your $2. And he walks away. Jesse, what do you think of this scene here of Mitch just could care less of what the homeless guy says and just gives him his money?
Dude, it's a really funny scene. And it's great because it's not like Mitch and Sam got a lot going for him either. Right. But he's kind of like talking down to these homeless people.
Oh, for sure. He's like, oh, you won't do it for $1? How about for $2?
And then actually like waves it in his face. Like, right. Here's your $2.
Dude, hey, that's man. That's a good point. And I never really thought of that before because without Pops, the both of them are homeless as well.
Interesting. Mitch and Sam enter the hospital next. They have to tell Pops they can't get the money. Sam gets pissed at Mitch here. Because Mitch says, I have to tell him. And Pop says, no, let me. And he tells him that he's also Mitch's father. And Sam's like, no, he's not. Come on. And Mitch is like, show him the locket. He pulls it open. He's like, who's that chick? Oh, that's your mom. And then, of course, Sam's like. In the next scene here, Mitch gets to the office. And the frat guys from earlier get out. Say, hey, that's a really funny prank you pulled on us, you know, with the cops. He's like, oh, really? Because I didn't think you guys would appreciate the humor, but yeah. And, of course, he's going to get his ass kicked. What do you think of this scene here? JD, I'll let you take this. So they got to tell Pops they're not going to get the money, and then he's got to come clean about being Mitch's father. And then Mitch is going to lose his best friend and get his ass kicked.
And he also gets thrown into a dumpster again.
I'm on it.
Take another shot. That's 6.
Shot to Jesse. It takes, you know, I know a lot of people complain that there's not much of a storyline here, but there's a lot of heart to be had to think of the roller coaster ride that Pops is going through of he's getting a heart, he's not getting a heart.
He's getting the horrors, he's not getting the horrors.
Hey, horrors, hearts, both those words sound similar.
I'm trying to say it like he does. The horrors.
Horrors.
Accent. Jimmy is talking with Mitch next. He says, you know, if you ever need anything from me, you just ask. Mitch says, well, can I stay at your place? Well, you know, the thing is, I'm living over at the Y, as you know. Got my old roommate, old Jack, a little particular about his guest here. He's got his knee. He's got to get drained. I'll tell you, that thing's pretty ripe. And then Mitch cuts him off. He's like, I don't care, okay? I won't stay at your place. Jeez. So we got the next scene of Mitch sleeping in his car, and a burglar busts out the window and starts taking out the radio. Mitch eventually wakes up in the back seat and says, hey, buddy, trying to get some sleep here. And the guy just looks at him and then takes off. And then Mitch is listening to his recorder. And that's when he realizes that he left the recorder on while they were in Cole's office and everything that he said was recorded. So Jesse, what do you think of this scene here?
The Chris Farley talking about his roommate at the YMCA is really creepy and disturbing. And
old Jack, he just sometimes I catch him just staring at me while I'm sleeping.
So you guys come from an era where you guys probably both had cars with radios susceptible to being stolen. My yes. question to you, did you take them out when you went inside places and left your car in parking lots?
I'm going to take this one because not only did I do that, but then I forgot one time and it got jacked. So,
Kyle, I'm going to go ahead and interrupt you and I'm going to take this one because I forgot to do that one time and my radio got jacked. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Oh, okay. You're just going to steal all my lines. That, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to step on your toes too.
Now, yeah, so my story is I did have one of those that you could take the faceplate off of it, basically, yeah. So people couldn't really tell that you had like a system in there. And I would take it into my locker room and stuff in high school, and I would hide it so nobody would take my shit. So I end up leaving it in one day in practice during basketball, and I come out to a broken window, which freaked me out because I thought somebody might be like in the car, and I was like, got that feeling of like panic set in real quick. And then I realized that they took my radio, and I also had my freaking wallet in the middle of the console and had just gotten my paycheck, cash money sitting in there. So they got away about $200 and about a $200 radio system. And yeah, and I had also paid to get a new window. So that was not a fun week for me. So in the next scene here, Mitch has found out his tape recorder was running. So he goes to find Sam. Sam is just looking at the gate of Cole's building here and he's just jumping at it, trying to bust into it. He's such a meathead. But it's hilarious watching him do that. So Mitch and Sam have a nice little heart-to-heart here, and they're on top of the roof. Mitch says, you know, remember in fifth grade when I was at the bottom of the monkey bars and I could look up your sister's skirt and I saw her panties? Sam says, yeah. Remember in 12th grade when you slept with her? And Mitch is like, yeah, that's enough of the reminiscing. JD, what'd you think of that scene?
I wasn't really expecting like them to get into so much incest.
Going to try and get Kathy back in this next scene here. So he's got all the residents from the building that they try to condemn, and he tells them that he has a plan. Kathy wants to know why they should believe him. He tells her that they were trying to earn $50,000 to get a heart transplant for our dad. And Kathy says, wait, you guys are brothers? Yeah, it's a really long story. I want to get into it. And Sam interrupts and goes, my dad boned his mother. Well, then I guess it's a short story. So they're talking to Kilpatrick next. They promise to get him his building back. Kilpatrick punches Sam, and then the homeless guy starts telling another story about being grateful, and he's got a new lease on life. And as he finishes the story, everybody that was surrounding him has completely left, and he's just standing there by himself. Jesse, what do you think of this scene?
This guy's really, really gone downhill. This poor guy. Like, just some corporate exec down to, like, not even being able to tell a story to other homeless people, as right. Justin pointed out.
They could literally care less what he's saying. So we've got another compilation next of Sam and Mitch, and they're getting into the opera house. They put out some special brownies. Mitch and Sam enter the room, and all the guys are scratching, and they broke out in the hives. And we've got our second shot here of Gary Coleman. And as Sam goes, I wonder what they're watching, because they're all staring at something here. And apparently it's a boxing match between Ken Norton and Gary Coleman. And the fight begins, and Gary Coleman immediately gets knocked out in the first punch. JD, what do you think of this flashback here?
I love that they actually have Ken Norton in this.
Yes. Legit and heavyweight boxer versus little Gary Coleman.
And he looks great. I really think he connects with Gary on that punch.
Yeah, he potatoed him for sure. Kathy says, I don't know why I'm here. Mitch says, oh, I know. An intense physical attraction to me. Outside, Travis is being interviewed. He says he's proud of two things. First, all the proceeds will go to the homeless. Secondly, I've overseen the production in every aspect of everything, and it will be the greatest Don Giovanni ever presented. Jimmy is
Don standing. Giovanni? Who's that dude?
Don Giovanni.
Jimmy is standing over a cage of skunks. He says, fellas, you've heard the old saying, in the land of the blind, the man with one eye is king. Well, today, in the land of the skunks, the man with half a nose is king. John Goodman comes out next. he wants to take a moment to recognize the man who made this happen. And Travis Cole stands up and takes a bow with his dog. And he looks down at John Goodman and he's like, Jesse, what do you think of this scene?
This was the last, like, this movie is stacked with well-known actors.
Yeah.
And I forgot John Goodman did that. So when I was watching it earlier today, I was like, oh, they're continually to throw them at you. And then you got Travis Cole's little, he's alone in the balcony, which I think is kind of weird. He's got no friends, no right. date, just got his creepy dog. And he does that weird, like, gesture with his hand. And it's so creepy.
So the play begins, and opera singer starts singing, and Pops walks out and says, wow, get a load of that mountain range. Come on, baby, let me buy you a steak. And she's trying to run away from him here. Travis tries to exit next, but Mitch is waiting for him with his legion of horrors. And he's interrupting the play, and Travis is not happy about this. JD, what'd you think of this scene?
I'm glad that the legion of horrors are there because Mitch needs the support. And, yes. like, Travis's world is slowly, slowly, like, crumbling in on him. Like, everything that he knows about opening the parking garage and opening the Chelsea, like, he's going to have to pay the fiddler here.
Yep. So we've got Jimmy next. And he's yelling, sing the song, boys! Sing the song! Sam comes in, and Jimmy says, release the skunks. Okay, got it. Righto. And they start running out, and then Jimmy starts yelling, run! Fly! So I love how Jimmy is, like, in his own little world here, is just going nuts. And then Sam comes in, and he's like, okie dokie, will do. What'd you think of this, Jesse?
I love the way he just is squatting over the rack, too, and snaps up and is like, okay, all right, right on. Like, just caught being a weird, creepy.
Right. So the skunks come running out, and the audience clears and runs for the exit. Mitch has his recorder here, and he says, remember when you said this? And he's giving it to Travis. Note to self. Making love to blow up doll, not as good as advertised. Mitch apologizes. Must have gone too far. And then he plays back the message of Travis. Mitch says, what you're going to do here is you're going to write a check for $50,000. And now Kilpatrick here is going to punch you in the stomach. And he gets socked by Kilpatrick. Now you're going to sign this contract, which gives full ownership of 99 Franklin Street back to Kilpatrick. So he signs that as well. He goes, Farling, here's your check for $50,000. And on his way out, Farling says, what are the odds I don't pay the money and I gamble it, try to double our odds here? And they're like, no, you're going to pay the money and get Pops' surgery. So Cole grabs the recorder and he throws it, and it hits one of the reporters in the back of the head, who yells, son of a bitch bastard. Cole,
son of a bitch bastard, one of the best lines in the movie.
Cole tells him this won't stand up in a court of law, and Mitch plays the recorder on the PA here. Cole hears that, he attacks him, and they fall off the balcony. And they land on a fat lady here. Mitch leans over and says, you okay, fat lady? She said, I'm fine. I just want you to keep that old creepy old man away from me here. Pop shows up and says, hey, Mitch, I don't care if you are my son. Get your own broad. JD, what'd you think of this?
Well, obviously, again, I love the line, son of a bitch bastard.
Right.
The graphics of Norm tackling Travis Cole from the top of the balcony, it looks pretty real, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it doesn't look doctored. He really does. I would have gone with Edge, but, you know, you're WCW, no big deal.
And also, I'm not going to say anything.
No, dude, don't tell him that. Dude, you take that back.
It's done. It's out there now. At Goldberg. I'm tweeting it. Jesse, I'm going to have you chime in here because I haven't really mentioned it, but one of my favorite parts of the scene is the guy in the audience that's just like, he believes that this is all being done because it's Don Giovanni play and it's a new take on it. What did you think of that guy throughout this scene here? He's just like, they've got skunks. Brilliant.
I'm so glad you mentioned it, because if you were going to try and leave this scene, I was going to interrupt and bring back to that guy. That guy is great because multiple reasons. He's excited about what they're doing. He thinks they're doing it. So it's kind of cool. Maybe he really enjoys live theater and opera.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just a crazy person. But one thing I do want to draw attention to, I'm not going to piss off our fan base here. He does have a pretty surprisingly attractive girl with him. despite that bow tie that he's wearing. So props to this guy. He must be wealthy as well. And yeah, I think that guy's hilarious. Like, ah, skunks, of course.
Of course. So in this next scene, we're going to listen to a clip. I just thought this would be cool to listen to this on the air here, because this is the last ever Chris Farley scene. So let's take a listen here as Jimmy is talking with Mitch.
Hey, Mitch!
Jimmy, your new nose looks great.
Thanks. Best $200 I ever spent.
Hey, Jimmy, that girl you're with, she's not the,
Yep. Lynn Young, the Saigon whore who bit my nose off. We're getting hitched.
Oh.
Jimmy, let's go.
Hold on. I'm talking to my friend here. Jeez. Sometimes you gotta remind the hen who the rooster is.
Well, good luck to you, Jimmy.
Okay, Mitch. See you around. Blah, 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 blah.
When I say let's go, you go.
Yeah? Time you shut your cake hole, Yoko. Women. Now listen, don't ever talk back to me like that in front of my friends.
You're making me really, really angry.
Oh, that scares me. That scares me to death. Look. Oh, you bit my new nose off.
JD, what do you think of the last ever scene from Chris Farley here?
First of all, I love his car. That's like definitely on my dream car list that he's got the Trans Am going on.
Yeah.
Like props to him for going out in style. He's got that. He's got the new nose. He's got a wonderful little clothing ensemble going on. He's got the girl.
He's been in so many movies that we've talked about in previous episodes. Tommy Boy, Black Sheep. He's in Wayne's World. He's got a bunch of good cameos in those movies, the first and the sequel. And it's sad that this is the last one that he's in. We're back into the hospital with Pops. He says he's feeling great. He just hopes the doctors can fix one other part of me. And he leans over to the guys and says, "It rhymes with cock." The ending of the movie here, Mitch is voicing over. He says, "Well, Sam and I got great new jobs. Pop's got his heart, and I got the girl. And Dr. Farling, he got over his gambling addiction. But the bookies beat him to death anyway. So now he's dead. That's it. Bye." That's the ending of the movie here as the credits roll and we get some outtakes. JD, what do you think of the ending of the movie here?
Definitely kind of like the perfect ending to the movie. You know, it just... Pop's is totally good. He... you know, verbally sums it up with a narrative. And then Dr. Farthing, well, he's dead. Goodbye.
Jesse, what did you think?
I think it's a perfect way to end it. You got the Pops is still being Pops, and Norm Macdonald has got his dry, kind of direct sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And they drive off in a very suburban neighborhood while Mitch is driving down the center of the road.
I had a great time. JD, I think this was your pick on this movie, so props to you on picking another good one. Back to back, man.
Hey, that's how I roll, like Logan and Sabretooth in the first Wolverine movie, back to back.
Why don't we preview next week? So our audience voted, we listened, and we're going to be doing Happy Gilmore starring Adam Sandler. Can't wait to get into this one. JD, what are you looking forward to most when we review Happy Gilmore?
Definitely Shooter McGavin. Definitely the dad from Freaks and Geeks. Some miniature golf. Some chubs. Some alligator porn. I think next week's episode is going to be pretty effing stellar, especially since you guys, the audience, voted for it. So this one's for you guys.
Yeah, I have to say I'm looking forward to a couple things. Grandma, because I think she's awesome in this. Alan Covert's character, Otto, the homeless guy. And then I'm looking forward to Bob Barker kicking Adam Sandler's ass. Haven't seen it in a while. I love that scene. You know, we'd love to have you back, Jesse. I think it's fun having three people on the show. So we'll try and figure out our schedule, see what we can do there. JD, let's send Jesse off here, and I'll let you take this since he's your baby bro.
Yeah, a big thanks to Jesse for joining us. Obviously, your input and expertise is welcomed and well appreciated, so thank you. Let us know, did you like Jesse? Do you hate Jesse? If you want more people in on this two-way to make it a three-way or four-way. I mean, hey, you know, let us know what you think. But a big thanks to Jesse because he, you know, anytime that we could bring someone else into the mix to give a different perspective, I think it adds to the dynamic of the podcast. And so I love having you here. So thanks, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. It's always fun. And I look forward to getting caught up on a couple that I've missed so far and look forward to you guys doing Happy Gilmore. And I will say, favorite thing that I'm going to be looking forward to when I rewatch Happy Gilmore this weekend is Ben Stiller.
Yes. Yes, he's great in this one. So, yeah, tweet us. Let us know if you like having the third member at Back in Time Pod. I'm at KAutry67. Justin is Unjust Justin. So let's talk about our poll topic for next week. Right now, you can go and vote on our horror episode. Again, you can choose between Nightmare on Elm Street, Candyman, Hellraiser, or Child's Play. That is up, so go vote. Let us know what you guys want to hear. Again, check us out on social media. We're also at facebook.com/backintimepod, and you can find our website, backintimepod.wordpress.com. But for now, we're going to hop back into the DeLorean and return back to present day. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Well, he's dead. Goodbye.
It means your future hasn't been written yet. No one's has. Your future is whatever you make it. So make it a good one. Both of you.
We will, Doc.
Stand back. All right, boys, buckle up.